Okay, let me put this here. Good morning, everybody. All right. Thank you for being here. My name is Mike Lubelfeld, Superintendent of Schools, North Shore School District 112 in sunny Lake County, Illinois, just north of here, 25 miles away or 3 hours by car. We really do appreciate being here today. It's an absolute honor and a treat to be among such incredible educators here at Cognia Connect. So Nick and I are going to take you on a little bit of journey of mindset shifting, and we appreciate you going on the ride with us. Brief background points. I am in my 10th year as a superintendent of schools here in Illinois. I've been a public school educator for just shy of 30 years. Been a middle school social studies teacher, 6th grade and 8th grade. I've been an associate, associate principal and principal at the middle school level, and elementary superintendent. So those of you from out of state, I just can't get out of the 8th grade. So it's a weird part of Illinois. I've got a beautiful, wonderful wife, Stephanie. She and I have been married 16 years on Friday. That's in 2 days, I believe. Yeah, make sure I remember that anniversary. And we have two wonderful children. We live up in Deerfield. Oh, here.
Do we have a second microphone in the house? I wonder.
We're going to share. It's okay.
That would be fantastic. Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Nick Poliak. I've found that typically when speakers come from far away or from other states, they're experts. So for those of you who are not Illinois residents, this is going to be amazing. For those of you that are from Illinois, it's just Mike and Nick. But either way, good morning. My name is Nick Poliak. I'm the superintendent of Lyon High School District, which is right around O'Hare Airport, not far from here. If you've flown into O'Hare, you flew probably right over our schools. And I've been a superintendent for 11 years now. This is my second school district. I spent 4 years in Central Illinois, but I started as a high school math teacher, tennis coach, soccer coach, and done kind of everything. Mike mentioned his family. My wife and I have been married for 19 years now. We got married in 2000. Smartest thing I ever did. Whatever year it is, that's what anniversary it is. We have 4 kids. And I was thinking about Cognia because I've been through things all the way back to North Central and then through Advanced Ed. But, you know, Measure Progress in Advanced Ed, you know, you could have been Measure or Advanced Progress. That's kind of redundant, right? You could have been Measured Ed. That sounds almost like a TV show about a talking horse. So I think Cognia was the correct way to go. If you don't get that, ask your neighbor. Mike and I, we talk a lot. And we've got anything we have, you can have. And so we've got a QR code and a little bit.do Cognia 2019. We'll put this up again at the end. So don't feel like you have to write everything down. If you want the slides, you can have everything. You can use it. But we did write a couple books, which is strange. It's not something we ever thought we would do. And so we'd like to start by just how that happened. And so, before we do that, we found this topic of the unlearning leader. People respond to it differently. So we want you to do just a brief turn and talk at your table. So when we say the phrase, what is an unlearning leader? What does that generate in your mind? What does that conjure up for you? So just talk for 1 minute, and then we're going to call you back together.
Thank you.
All right, let's bring it back together. Loud voices from your tables. Raise your hand. We want you to shout out back to us. What did you talk about? What is an unlearning leader?
Not being stuck.
Not being stuck. Thank you. Keep shouting it out.
Never stop learning.
Never stop learning. Thank you.
In the back.
Get rid of the restraints.
Get rid of the restraints. Thank you.
Know what the research says.
Know what the research says. Yep.
I have to shout out to my table mate because she's super Elliot to come up with this. Do you want to say what you came up with? It was awesome. It was awesome.
Basically, he said that we have to unlearn what we learned growing up. Students today don't learn the same way we did.
We have to unlearn what we learned growing up. Big shout out. Students don't learn the way we did. Brilliant shout out from the back.
I think we're done. I think we can go.
That's right. Thank you all for coming. Have a nice conference. That was brilliant.
What's interesting is when we ask this question in different places, we get different answers. Sometimes we ask that question and we get very negative responses.
Yeah.
People that are stuck in their ways. People unwilling to change or unwilling to look at different options. So that word unlearning, for some people, it means like a lack of learning, or an inability to learn. That's not what we're talking about today.
No, we're talking about what you all said, what you all shouted out. Nick and I were called to write this book, and we'll go a little bit into the story as to how that happened. And we're really here to share with you the mindset of unlearning that triggered something in us that really passionately drove us and drives us to lead differently and lead through that unlearning lens. So while, of course, we're proud of our books and it's awesome, and we're not here to sell you books or sell, we didn't bring them or anything, although you certainly could buy them if you want to. I mean, they are on Amazon. I'm just saying, it's no pressure. We're really here for the mindset and the concept. So let's tell them a little bit about...
So here's what happened.
Okay.
Mike and Nick go to the White House. We say that to you because we want you to think we're important. We did actually go to the White House, but we got an invitation to an event. It was an innovation summit. Superintendents from across the country came together. We went to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and we got to collaborate on projects and talk about best practices in the country. And we left that event pretty jazzed up. We came back home to our districts, and the very next day in Lake County, Northern Illinois, there was an event called the Future Ready Summit. And we brought teams, and we went to that. So we had this innovation summit at the White House. We came back, we took our teams to this Future Ready Summit, and we saw a video from a guy named Jack Aldrich. And Jack is a futurist, which apparently is an occupation of some sort.
I'm looking into it.
And we saw this video of Jack talking to a room of healthcare professionals. And he talked about this concept of unlearning, and it was this aha moment for the two of us.
So what if someone was to say to you, for example, what two colors are the yield sign? So think about the simple yield sign on the road. You see them all over. What two colors? If you think they're yellow and black, would you raise your hand high and proud? Think a yield sign's yellow and black. Yield, slow down, caution, yeah. If you think a yield sign is red and white, raise your hand if you think it's red and white. Okay, well, this was on that video. And again, it's silly, simple, sort of interesting, weird, and intriguing. Culturally, we all think, because many of us were taught and or many of us learned, that yield signs were, in fact, yellow and black. And they were until 1971. They've been red and white all over the United States since 1971. And here's the weird thing. I was born in 1968. I taught driver's ed in 1992. I thought they were yellow and black. He was born in 1977, and he went to Joliet Catholic High School. That must have been using textbooks from the 60s, because he thought it was yellow and black. Jack went on to talk about something a bit more serious than a road sign, although the concept stuck with us, and we'll come back to it. He talked to a group of healthcare professionals that were talking about the causes of ulcers. And conventional wisdom used to suggest that ulcers were caused by spicy food and stress. Made sense. People saw the diagnosis. It was common conventional practice in the medical profession. Dr. Barry Marshall discovered it was actually bacteria that causes ulcers in the stomach gut. He talked about it, and Jack Aldrich reports that he was laughed off the stage by his medical colleagues. And then he was booed off the stage in another one. Barry Marshall actually ingested the bacteria to prove to his medical colleagues that bacteria causes an ulcer, not stress and spicy food. Quick point. Jack Aldrich said it took about 17 years for the medical profession to change, to unlearn what they had thought was right. Now, all of a sudden, here's the epiphany, right? We're all of a sudden saying, wait a minute, we have about 17 years to have students in our public schools, right? What if we learn something, know something, and it's proven, like a red yield sign, in pre-K or 3K, but we don't change anything, and we don't learn it, accept it, embrace it, or act on it, till they're 20, We've just robbed a generation of best practices for 20 years compounded. That's what called us to write the book.
So Jack quotes Lao Tzu and says, "To attain knowledge, add things every day. To attain wisdom, remove things every day." And so we adhere to the belief that we need to unlearn things that we once learned and get them out of the system in order to make room for the new realities, the new things our students need. So Mike gave you the story about the yield signs and ulcers, and this is just people see this graphic and go, oh my gosh, they are red and white, right? Those of you who raised your hand, we took pictures. We know who you are.
I'm right there with you.
But, you know, we always credit Jack Aldrich, but as it turns out, Jack stole the idea of unlearning from someone else a long time ago.
In a galaxy far, far away, you see, as authors, we conduct some heavy-duty research, went to the archives. We found out the ancient Jedi master knew about unlearning. Please take a listen. It really sounds good up here. You'd like it if you could hear it.
It worked in warm-ups, believe me.
No, it's no different in your mind. You must unlearn what you have learned, said Master Yoda.
Try it.
This is really funny when it works. Well, they get it, but we'll go to the next slide. The significant part of this unlearning, obviously, Yoda is a fictional character, and we didn't study him for our research, but we like it here because there is a bit of unlearning in Star Wars, right? This was in the late 70s. This was revolutionary in filmmaking and in sound. George Lucas and his teams revolutionized the way we experience movies and film. The story in Star Wars goes, Yoda's teaching Luke, unlearn how you pick stuff up with your body, you do it from your mind. So unlearn that you've done your whole life picking stuff up and that's how you get it. No, you must unlearn that. Throw that out. Use your mind. The Force was strong with Luke. I mean, you might remember. And then it worked. It's not just in fantasy, though, that unlearning is important.
Yeah. So this is more recent for you. September 10th, 2018, in the New York Times, the headline was, "It's hard for doctors to unlearn things, and that's costly for all of us." And this article listed off a whole myriad of medical practices that we know are wrong that we still keep doing. So giving Pedialyte to kids for dehydration, when any drink will do. We pay more for the Pedialyte and it doesn't do any better. We prescribe too many antidepressants to kids. We induce childbirth too early, creating developmental issues. When people break their ankle, we take x-rays and they never reveal anything. There's too many bones in there, but we still spend thousands of dollars. And the list goes on and on and on. Like Mike said, it takes us years and years to unlearn these things that are no longer true. And so, you know, we'd like to think we can trust doctors. They are the medical professionals. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, here's a great example of something we should trust from doctors.
I mean, listen, 20,679 physicians, they say Luckies are less irritating. Luckies are toasted. Yeah. It kind of coats the throat. I'm going to buy a carton of Luckies right now. I'm not.
So Mike mentioned this earlier. You know, we're not on a sales junket. We're here to talk about a mindset.
Yeah.
And that mindset has to happen from the school board to the superintendents to the building administrators to the teachers if you want it to get to the students and to the parents and the community. And so you need to embrace this entire mindset of unlearning. And I will tell you, I've not had one great idea of my own ever. Like, I've got some of our folks here, you guys can attest to the fact that I don't have any good ideas. But what I can hope to do in my school district is create an environment where unlearning is okay, it's supported, and it's celebrated. And I want to give you a couple examples, just so you understand what I'm talking about. At Leiden, we have a program called CoLab. It's 2 years old now, and it was created by a group of teachers. We separated them during some PLC time and gave them some space and time to think differently. We called them the innovation incubators, and we said, just go dream big. Bring us back ideas that you want to try in the school, and we'll help support, and then we'll look at them. If we like them, we'll scale them up. If not, we'll try something different. And so through various iterations, they created CoLab. CoLab is an interdisciplinary approach to freshman year. 4-hour block, 5 courses woven together through a problem-based, standards-based graded program. So they don't go to English for 40 minutes and ring a bell and then stop doing English and go somewhere else and learn science for 40 minutes and ring a bell and stop doing English. CoLab tore down the silos and we have 200 freshmen in a completely different freshman year experience. And so the kids made this video, fingers crossed.
I've got an idea. Oh, it's coming out there.
We are all using these skills to solve problems in the real world. Why not use them more in school?
The CoLab is a school within a school. It's an experience where students are tackling real world problems together and applying these skills to create solutions. English, social studies, science, digital literacy, and PE teachers are working together to teach students how to identify problems, come up with solutions, and collaborate on projects.
The schedule looks a little different since there's no switching classes at the sound of a bell. Instead, you learn the skills you need for each subject through unique experiences. There's a focus on community, the CoLab community, the writing community, and the Flipple community. In the real world, everyone has their own strengths. At Leiden, why not celebrate those and try something different? Why not spend more time in the community? Why not collaborate? Why not contribute? Why not CoLab?
So, students have been able to opt into this program. And these are some pictures from just the other day. Every quarter ends in an exhibition where the kids are showcasing their work, showing what they've learned through the theme of that quarter. So there are identity maps where kids are talking about where they're from and who their family is and what's special about them. On the top right, the kids on Flipgrid recorded themselves delivering poetry out loud, and then students took us through as docents through this museum they created, and we could put on the headphones and watch the kids deliver their poetry. And it was this awesome culmination of all the things they're doing. But what we're finding is that the kids are coming out with these future-ready skills that we want them to have. They're not memorizing state capitals. They're becoming confident speakers and collaborators. They're having to be creative to solve problems. And we're launching them with a whole different skill set into the rest of their high school career and beyond. And so we were nervous. We were watching the test scores to come out after year one. You know, what's going to happen? And the kids performed just as well or better than their classmates who went through the traditional pathway. And so that was reaffirming, and we're now in year two. But the important thing here is that it wasn't the superintendent, it wasn't the principals, it wasn't the Board of Education. We didn't say, go create CoLab. We said, come up with a good idea and bring it to us. And that's that idea of empowering unlearning.
Now, what I want to do is, if you want to go to the next slide, I'm gonna get this started. This is a story about unlearning stereotypes, unlearning prejudice, unlearning predisposition as to what someone who is at risk could or should be able to do. This is about the unlearning mentality and concept. Nick's going to tell you a little story. I'm going to tee it up for you. At Leiden, there's a great deal of diversity. About 70% of the children are non-Caucasian. And of the Caucasian children, there's about 40 different languages because they all hail from Central and Eastern Europe. So he's got diversity on top of diversity. Young lady came from Guatemala. She came from Guatemala because one of her siblings was murdered, one of her siblings disappeared, and one of her siblings lived in the United States. Her parents couldn't leave Guatemala because the sibling who disappeared might come home and wouldn't know where to go. So they sent this youngster, 14 years old, alone to the United States to live with the sibling who was here. So Maria, a young lady from Guatemala, at risk, real trauma in the family, no English, comes to Leiden Township High School, walks in, and then we're going to tell you how we can dispel all these myths because of the culture of unlearning, in this case at Leiden High School, but also conceptually about simply accepting all of us as equal humans. Nick, take it away.
So while Maria's story is playing out, and she's got, you know, we talk about adverse childhood experiences, she's got them all. She's traumatized, she's in a new place, doesn't speak the language, doesn't know anybody, shows up at our high school. At the same time that her storyline is playing out, our theater department was engaged in some unlearning. Now, they didn't call it that, but they noticed that in a school that was 70% Latinx, those students were not signing up to be in our plays and our musicals. Perhaps Oklahoma wasn't what they were wanting to do on stage, right? And so our theater department said, can we do something different? Can we create a program called Teatro Leiden, where we pick a show once a year, and we cast it twice, with an English-speaking cast and a Spanish-speaking cast, and some of our bilingual thespians can be in the crossover cast and student directors. But we want to try this. And then when folks come on a Saturday, maybe the 5 o'clock show is in English and the 7 o'clock show is in Spanish. And so they did. They found a show called La Gringa. And this was the first ever show we did in Teatro Leiden 5 years ago. And so when we were getting ready to put this show on, Maria is a freshman in high school, and her Spanish teacher says, here, take this script home and read it. You're gonna come back tomorrow and read this. Maria didn't even know what she was doing. She went home, she read it, she came back, she read for the part. She was not only selected for La Gringa, she was given the lead. Like, let that sink in for a second. A student brand new to our country, doesn't speak a word of English, just got selected to be the lead in a play on stage at our school. So Maria was the star of La Gringa. It's a story about a girl from Puerto Rico who comes to the mainland US and doesn't feel like she fits in. After a while, she goes back to Puerto Rico and is no longer accepted there because now she's American. She's a girl stuck between two worlds. It was Maria's story, albeit Guatemala and not in Puerto Rico, right? And so Maria went on to star in 4 different productions of Teatro Leiden over the course of her career. She and her classmates created a club called the Excellence Club, where they highlighted the ELL. And their goal was to get more kids that were learning the language into clubs and sports and activities so they could find their connection. I didn't tell the theater department to do this, right? I think at Leiden we have a culture where unlearning is supported. And in this particular case, the theater department said, we're gonna do it different than we've always done it. We're gonna try something. That program, 2 years ago, was awarded the National Magna Award, top equity program in the country by the National School Board Association. And so, yeah, right? And so we're at this big event, and that announcement is made, and Donors Choose stands up and says, we're going to give you $10,000. Congratulations. Here's $10,000 to support your program. So what do you do with $10,000 for a program that's been running for 5 years? We hired a local Latinx playwright to create a show for our kids about our community, and that's the show they're going to do this year. And so it just kind of keeps going, but it's all part of that mindset is what we're trying to get through to you. So yeah, like everybody here is like, yeah, let's do this. Let's unlearn things. There's things we got to get rid of, new things to do, but there's an enemy.
What is the greatest enemy to unlearning? Portrayed up here by, who knows?
Who is this? Dudley Do Right.
Dudley Do Right.
He's not the enemy.
No, he's not the enemy. He's the good one. Who's the bad one?
Snidely Whiplash.
Snidely Whiplash. Thank you. All right. So what's the greatest enemy to unlearning? What are we stuck with in our school systems typically, and even in our corporate world and in our whole country? What are we stuck with against change? That's the way we've always done it. That's the way we always do it. We call it Tawadi. That's the way we always do it. Now, you'll notice the crumpled up paper because we're trying to subliminally share with you, crumple that paper up. That's the way we've always done it can kill innovation, can kill change, can stymie the breaking and shattering of stereotypes, prejudice. That's the greatest enemy to unlearning, is that's the way we've always done it. Anytime you hear that, say, all right, let's get a whole commission right now because whatever that was, we're changing it just because we are. Let's figure out how. Someone help me out, you know. And then you include other voices. Start small and scale it up. Focus on the winners, as Todd Whitaker would say, not on the losers. They don't like you anyways. Focus on the good ones, the good people that are maybe afraid, maybe scared, but they can do it. Take them with you, and they'll do it.
Yeah, and a word of caution, not everything you've been doing is bad.
Correct.
We're not saying throw everything out. We're saying, what do you need to weed out of the garden?
Yeah.
So that the correct things are growing. And so, a couple examples. Ian Jukes is an educator and a writer, a speaker. He tells a story about a study done about five monkeys. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's actually true or not, but I just cited it, so I'm covered now.
Yeah.
What he says is there's this enclosure, chain link enclosure, with five monkeys in there. And they bring in a set of stairs right in the center, and from the middle, they hang a bunch of bananas from the top. And so one by one, the monkeys start to ascend the stairs to go get the bananas, right? The testers of this spray the entire enclosure down with ice cold water so the monkeys get off the stairs. They go back up the stairs, cold water, they get down. This repeats and repeats until eventually the monkeys stop trying to get the bananas. They don't want to get sprayed with water. So then the testers remove one of the monkeys and introduce a brand new one to the environment. He comes in and says, "Hey, bananas." Starts to go up the stairs. The other monkeys attack him and pull him off the stairs. They start repeating this, pulling out the original monkeys and putting in new ones. And eventually there's five brand new monkeys in there. None of them have ever been sprayed by water, but none of them go to get the bananas.
Do you know why?
Because we don't get the bananas in this cage. That's not
the way
we do
it.
So think about that for a second. There are all these things we do in education. None of us were around when they started, but we don't change them because we don't go get that banana in our schools. We don't do that banana in education. If you think about the way our schools are designed, we sort and place our kids based on their production date into classrooms. All right, you guys were born this year. Congratulations, you're the kindergartners. You guys were born next year. You're the kindergartners, but you're now the first graders. You know where that comes from? It's our good friend Horace Mann. He traveled many years ago in the
Prussian Republic or the Prussian Empire.
So he traveled to Prussia and found this system for setting up schools. And he brought it back to us. And we're still doing it today. And so I sent Mike on a research mission. I gave him an airline ticket and I said, "All right, go to Prussia. I want you to find out if they're still doing it and come back and report to me." Does anybody know whether or not they're still doing this in Prussia? Why aren't they doing this in Prussia?
Because there isn't any Prussia.
It no longer exists.
Prussia does not exist anymore. So I'm still looking.
So we keep doing this. We've never asked ourselves a question or allowed ourselves to evolve. If you think about our high school systems, the Committee of 10 learned white men back in the,
1892, yeah, the 1890s.
Set up our current system for high school. And in that set of decisions they made, they said, you're going to teach biology, and then you're going to teach chemistry, and then you're going to teach physics. Mm-hmm. Why, Mike?
Because that's alphabetical. It's not pedagogical, it's alphabetical.
Right? And we keep doing it today. In education, we don't go get that banana. We've never been sprayed with the water.
But I'll tell you something, though. In high schools where they teach physics first, that ties and correlates to the eighth grade algebra, it's often very difficult for the community to accept that, for the school system to accept that, and for anybody to understand, pedagogically, mathematically, and brain-wise and learning-wise, it actually makes sense. Yet there's not this common, it's always like, well, yeah, our freshmen have to learn physics. It makes no sense. They should learn biology. We did. That's a big part of our change management and leadership process, too, is really getting a compelling why to the greater good and the greater community. Everybody's an expert in what we do because they all went through what we do. That's a challenge of leadership. We can also harness that as the good. That's a challenge, though, is the greater community and change.
Yeah. Standards-based grading. I know what A's, B's, C's, D's, and F's are. I don't know why we don't give E's, but I don't know what 1, 2, 3, and 4 means. So don't change it, because I know that system, right? I was successful because of that system.
Exactly.
So do we want to tell the NASA story?
No. I mean, it's a great story, and we were just at NASA in Huntsville, Alabama. Shout out to our Alabama friends who are here today. We were at the National Space and Rocket Center. We were at Missile City, Rocket City, and we also went to the Athens Public Schools. But we're not going to tell you about that story.
I will tell you, since you're in Chicago, and you got to experience some classic snow this morning, 5 years ago, we had a really, really bad winter in Illinois. And all the schools were closed because of the wind chills. And I happened to be on Twitter, and I saw a colleague of mine in Indiana tweeting and retweeting his teacher's messages about their e-learning day. Mm-hmm. And I said, what's that? And so I sent him a message on Twitter. Within 30 minutes, he and I were on the phone with each other. Within 24 hours, he emailed me the language that they used with their legislators to pass a bill allowing e-learning days in Indiana. We then took that, along with a couple other superintendents in Illinois, and gave it to a legislator here who passed a bill creating a pilot for three school districts to start doing e-learning days mm-hmm. instead of closing school. And by that, I mean students stay home, teachers stay home, school still happens, and you don't make it up at the end of the year. Now, just this past year, it's been opened up to the entire state of Illinois. And so when we...
Definitely applause, absolutely. That's unlearning seat time, unlearning restriction, really taking a risk is can we trust without a controlled environment that learning will take place. Learning is the outcome of education. It's a very interesting reality in a control compliance system.
And to teach our students that school is more than a physical building, school is the collection of experiences you get over time, and learning can happen anywhere.
Well, let me peel this back. Nick's a superintendent of schools. He said he saw on Twitter, social media, a superintendent of schools in Indiana, a state away, that they were doing something interesting and intriguing, so Nick sent him a message, then had a telephone call, then engaged with legislators, then did policy and advocacy work, then became a leader in the state, and then had something happen. That's unlearning, because oftentimes, this is good to get in person and get the relationship, we've got to physically meet to get people from all over our country, even the world, to sit and learn from one another and network. This is essential. Never take it away. Never take it away. Yet we also can't restrict state-to-state collaboration only to the once or twice or three times a year in person. We've got to unlearn and sort of open up our learning and our networking to go where there's no walls and, like Friedman said, the world is flat. We got to capitalize on that, leverage it.
So if you think about it, one of the questions you'll get from folks is, you know, is this right pedagogically speaking? Is this a good idea? And so... one of the things Mike and I have talked to groups about is if you look at your teachers and ask them how they're getting their master's degrees, how people are getting their doctorates today, they're almost all blended or online programs. There are few fully in-seat programs. So we're doing it at the adult level. Now we're showing kids that learning can happen anywhere, right? So I believe there's so much power in personalizing these stories. And you know, we can talk about superintendent or principal leadership or board leadership, but teacher leadership, I think, is crucial here.
Absolutely.
And so I want to tell you just a story about one student of ours. His name is Fabian. Fabian was an immigrant from Poland, came over during junior high with his family. During his freshman year at Leiden, he had a teacher by the name of Frank Holthaus. Mm-hmm. Frank was teaching a Project Lead the Way course for Fabian, and it was a pre-engineering course. And there was about 3 or 4 weeks left in the school year. And Fabian had done all the assignments, finished all the projects. He was done with the standard curriculum, right? That's what we do. We teach this, and then we do this, and then it's that project, and the next one. Fabian was done with everything early. And he asked a simple question to his teacher. He said, I'm finished with all my work. What should I do? And if you think of all the responses a teacher can have, he could say, put your head down, go help your friends, do your homework for your other classes. There's a lot of ways he could have answered, but I think the way he did answer is so incredibly important. He looked at Fabian and said, what do you want to do? And almost instantly, the most ridiculously complex answer, Fabian said, I want to use our software and our 3D printers to make a model of the high school. Teacher okay. said, okay, yeah. go for it. So Fabian started looking at Google Map images mm-hmm. of the school, and sketching it out and programming it in to Autodesk Inventor. And he couldn't figure out some of the scale. So he went in those Google Maps, he could see houses across the street. So he went and measured one of those houses and used that as a scale factor back against the building. He got the maintenance guys to take him on the roof so he could measure every HVAC unit up there. He put a GoPro camera on the top of his mom's car and had her drive around the building because he's 14, he can't drive. Scene by scene, he programmed in every step, every door, every window, every aspect of the school. And when he was done, he 3D printed the most complex extrusion that we had ever seen, our teacher had ever seen, and he teaches at the college too. And so Fabian has this school, he presents it to his principal as a gift, and there's still time left in the year. So he says, can I do the other high school in the district? And we said, yeah. And about a third the time, he 3D prints our other high school, gives it to that principal, who he'd never met before, as a gift. It's about this time, Mike and I had an invitation to go to the White House. Did we tell you about that?
I think we mentioned when we went to the White House.
And so I had heard the stories about Fabian. So I called him into my office. And I said, hey, I need a favor. What you did with the schools, could you make a White House?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, I could do that. So he makes a fully 3D printed White House with an East Wing and a West Wing. He writes a letter to then President Obama explaining the technology he used and how this is a gift from him and from Leiden to the president. So Mike and I travel. That picture on the left is me handing Fabian's White House to the Deputy Director of Innovation. We live streamed it with social media back so Fabian could watch it happen live and hear the applause when his gift was delivered. It was one of the coolest moments I've ever had professionally. Fast forward to Fabian's sophomore year, he walks into my office and makes an appointment with my assistant to come see me. And what kid makes an appointment with a superintendent, right? So Fabian comes into my office and he says, hey, I'd like to make a presentation to the Board of Education. I said, oh, okay. What do you want to talk about? He said, it's a surprise.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
I figure at this point, though, I owe him one. So I put him on the agenda. Board meeting night comes. Fabian's sitting in the audience. Sitting behind me is something covered in a sheet. I don't know what it is. So I announce him. He steps up. He removes the sheet to reveal a fully 3D printed working violin that he made in our schools as a secret project. He plugs in an amp to it, gets up and plays Twinkle Twinkle Little Star, and then he apologizes to the board for not being very good because he just learned to play the violin 2 weeks ago. He's a cellist. The board members' jaws were like on the table. I think I got 3 more years on my contract just that night. But Fabian just wanted to do this. There was a passion built up in him, right? And I trace it back to that teacher's one phrase, what do you want to do? If he had said, go help your friends with their projects, would any of that happen? I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, and part of this bigger picture, global scale, is why do we deem certain children at risk when there's really nothing risky about being an immigrant or speaking a different language or having a different economic status than others, being a different race than the political majority or something of that nature? Our mindset of constantly putting people into silos, checkboxes, and diminishing their value has created a reality where sometimes we don't even realize we've created a system that's our own worst enemy that we can't get out of it. Fabian's an immigrant English language learner. He's also gifted and talented. We don't need a test to prove that. We don't need any of that stuff. And you've got a teacher who's also gifted and talented. And you've got this thing where, oh, you're another human being. I respect you. I honor and value your worth and your dignity. And I'll treat you as an equal. And here's the situation. Here's what I'm teaching. Here's what you're learning. Here are your opportunities. What do you want to do? What's your passion? We'll support it and move on. No what ifs, no buts, no. It's okay. Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
So I appreciate your interjection, but my story's not done yet.
I know. I figured they needed a little break, a little cognitive break from hearing your voice. I'm just saying.
Thank you.
Okay.
So senior year, Fabian wants to make another presentation to the board. Okay. He wants to come in March. Well, he tells me what he's doing this time. He found a company in Chicago with bigger 3D printers. And he's created a design to 3D print a working cello. And so he's on the docket for March. A week before the board meeting, Fabian comes in to talk to me. He was done. He created the cello. He wanted it to shine like a real cello. So he took it to an auto detailing shop and asked them to paint it the way they paint a car. And so they did. And then one of the people at the shop saw it and thought it was made of metal and brought it to the area where they fire the paint and melted it to a pub. So he came in my office and told me the story, and the hairs are standing up on my arm retelling that. And I said, Fabian, I'm so sorry. And he said, it's okay. He said, can I come in May instead of March? And he just started over, and he remade it, and he presented, and his story got out. He was on the cover of a magazine for the Society of Manufacturing Engineers as one of their top 30 under 30. There were 29 young professionals in this one high school kid's face on the cover of the magazine. Are you familiar with COSIN, the national organization for tech directors? Mm-hmm. They heard about Fabian, and they flew him out to Portland, Oregon last year to be their keynote speaker to talk about his work.
And they bought a seat for the cello, no joke. So he brought the cello, and they flew him out there. Yeah.
Yeah, he played his cello on stage at the COSIN National Conference.
Yeah.
He's now in college. He's studying to be an aeronautical engineer at Lewis University. He's already got his pilot's license. He just texted me yesterday, so we keep in touch. But I want to make sure I underscore the point that goes back to one little example of unlearning from one teacher to one student.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about the mindset, and it's about the culture.
We're not going to show you this video, but if you're interested in our slides and you take a picture of it, we'll put the link up later. There's something about the neuroplasticity of the brain, and this is a really neat 8-minute video that takes through the unlearning riding a bike as an adult, and then he has his son unlearn riding the bike, and it shows that it took the son about a quarter of the time to unlearn it, and it was a scientific experiment, more or less, about the plasticity of the brain and the implications of what we should be doing in the early childhood years and the elementary years, but also the fact that neuroplasticity shows even if we've been doing something for 15 years, we can change it. The students will be just fine. They'll actually be more fine than we are. It's a pretty neat little bike.
So, contextually, at a meta level, things are changing. Whether it's virtual reality, AI, open educational resources, things are changing all around us in education. And, Mike and I, we do some presentations and we try to help people understand virtual reality and augmented reality. And I keep a box of these Google Cardboard in my trunk for wherever we go, because we'll work with folks and find that many people haven't even dipped their toes into this yet. I'm trying to push myself in ways as a professional. And so I bought myself a 3D camera,
mm-hmm.
a 360 camera. I can just plug into my phone and I can start recording in 360 degrees. If you've ever done that before, be mindful that as you record, you're also recording your own face because it records everything. So, proud to admit, I'm a 40-something-year-old man. I bought myself a selfie stick so that I could hold the camera up higher. True confessions. But we're doing $100 million worth of construction at Leiden right now. And one of the things I thought might be helpful is to create videos and show people inside the construction projects. And so periodically, I just plug in my 360 camera, and I walk around with a hard hat on, and I commentate on where we are in the progress of the building. And I will tell you, I don't know, I can watch how many views there are, and so that's good to know, but I ran into one of our support staff members in the hallway one day, and she said, Dr. Poliak, thank you for your videos. Every time you send them, I go around and I show all my neighbors. I said, that's pretty cool, right? And then some people will watch it, and they don't realize you can articulate and look around in all directions in these videos, so whether the audio works or not, I want you to see this. This is just me walking through our new aquatic center.
What's neat is it's an immersive video experience, and you literally can show in time, real time, anytime, anywhere, and you don't need to be a professional videographer or have a news crew there. You can do a decent job as an amateur using the devices in our pockets and maybe $100, even $50, 360 degree add-on to a cell phone. And as the superintendent of schools, the communicator in chief, so to speak, he's getting the message out. We don't even know how far the message goes. It's powerful. It's fascinating. Anytime someone says, I don't know what's going on in your school district, you got to help them unlearn that it's going to be the weekly newspaper in print or it's going to be the weekly newsletter in print and make a compelling reason for them to go to other places and help take them there.
All right, we want to prove that you're all capable of unlearning.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So this is the call and response portion of the show. So when we ask a question, you're going to shout out the answer. After eating, wait 30 minutes before you can
swear.
Your response is completely correct. However, it's inaccurate. You can eat while you're swimming. You're going to be fine.
Yep, exactly. This will stay in your stomach forever.
Again, you're a very smart group. The reality is your stomach has acid. It will dissolve that gum.
According to ancient mythology, why do we have lightning?
Zeus. The ancient folks, we call ancient, the peoples who made these stories up that we believe, they had to make sense of the natural world. They genuinely had beliefs that up on Mount Olympus, the gods would get angry and Zeus would throw lightning bolts, or so we say. The reality, though, is we now know that lightning comes, you know, from Apollo.
That's the sun.
His
chariot.
No, you know what I'm saying. So we've unlearned collectively as a Western society that lightning is formed by something other than Zeus.
All right. In the early 1900s, it was okay to put cocaine into this popular drink.
Coca-Cola, you know why it was so nice back then? It was both numbing and addictive. This is a real advertisement. Whew, thankfully, we've unlearned that, or we'd be a nation addicted to cocaine.
It's truth in advertising.
So when you go back to this whole concept of unlearning, we certainly did not create it. Jack Aldrich did not create it. Master Yoda did not create it, or George Lucas and all that. This was actually a collection of quotes attributed to Alvin Toffler, an author, a prolific author, about a half century ago. Wrote Future Shock, Third Wave. And he thought back in the 60s and 70s, thinking about our generation today, the 21st century, he was thinking about us. And he said the illiterate of the 21st century will not be those who cannot read and write, but those who cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn. And this sticks with us because he saw that as our future. That was when Moore's Law, you know, was first becoming, you know, known and all that, where information is doubling, tripling, exponential growth. How do we keep up with it? Well, we need to. And we are. And we can't resist it. We can't reject it. We've got to embrace it, support one another, and pivot and evolve and unlearn.
So just a quick minute at your table. We just want to get a little more callback from you. What do our school districts need to unlearn? Current practices that we need to weed out of the garden. Go. Right. Fortunately or unfortunately, this conversation could go on all day.
Absolutely.
But we'd like to hear a few examples. Mike has been practicing his listening and repeating skills, so we'll try him again. What did you talk about at your table? What do we need to unlearn?
Seat time.
Seat time. Oh, I just did it.
We need to unlearn seat time as being the sort of definition as to what constitutes acceptable learning and teaching. Unlearn seat time. Back in the back.
That Fabian needed to go to college.
Yeah, unlearn that Fabian needed to go to college.
Why couldn't he go someplace and already be a productive citizen with his abilities, but we have created this environment that he has to go sit in these classes that he already could face?
With his abilities, why do we create the conditions where he now is required to go, or systematically, structurally required to go to sit in classes now when he's got these talents and he should be allowed to soar?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
What else?
Grading, say it again.
Traditional grading.
Traditional grading.
Yeah.
We understand 100, 90, 80, 70, 60, and many of us have probably been in arguments and almost fist fights over our careers about 90 to 100, 91 to 100, 93 to 100, because if it's 95 to 100, it's higher standards.
Completely.
It's serious beliefs, yeah.
Completely agree, as long as we still allow kindergartners to get extra credit for boxes of Kleenex. We can't take that away.
Thank you. Other things we need to unlearn is public schools, private schools, school leaders.
Typical school year.
Well, up in Highland Park, we do tend to the seeding and planting and harvesting seasons, so it is helpful in our agrarian world up there in the suburbs to be ready to pick the soybeans that don't grow there.
On the East Coast, they have the King's Island Law. There's a certain date that school has to be closed and over, and when school has to start, so that the kids can be the employees at King's Island. Like, that's good pedagogy.
A real shift as we go forward over the years, quick little interjection, with the infrastructural needs we have, is the concept that we actually have to warehouse people and children as the only way to have school, but that'll be for another conference or another time. What else do we need to unlearn?
Grade levels.
Grade levels. As Sir Ken Robinson said in his Changing Educational Paradigms video, it's the manufacture date, and Nick had mentioned it's your born on date that puts you in your cluster of learning.
So there's so many.
Oh yeah.
There's so many. We talked a little bit about grades and homework. Extra credit, what is this from?
Bless you.
Christmas Story, thank
Good
you.
Good call.
Right? What about unlearning communication? Do we communicate with others differently today than we did 10 years ago, 50 years ago? Right? We are connected at all times, whether we like it or not. On the drive-in this morning, I had a conversation with our head of maintenance to make sure that the snow removal and everything was good for our schools.
What? It's not even November!
Our board members have access to us at all times, right? So, how about the workforce? Is the workforce changing that are in our school districts today?
Not enough. What's neat and what's tough is that we've got people from their 20s to their 80s in our school systems. That's neat and it's tough. Another thing is a millennial mindset isn't that 35-year company woman or company man mindset upon which public education, at least, has been built in this nation. What are we going to do? We have to pivot. We have to unlearn. We have to figure this out.
So, as Mike says a lot of times, in your organizations, you have people in their 20s, sometimes people in their teens working in the schools in different roles, up to people in their 60s and 70s and sometimes even 80s working in your schools. And so you're trying to be relevant organizationally to your employee base. Think about just, we're in Chicago, not too far from here is Google Chicago. Anybody had the opportunity to be inside of a Google office ever? If you get the chance, it's fascinating, you're going to see every few steps, there's food stations. They have healthy drinks behind clear glass refrigerator doors. Unhealthy drinks, like Coke and energy drinks, behind a frosted glass door.
And beer.
There's beer. We're not advocating for that in your
school. Absolutely
schools.
Not. Absolutely not. Don't unlearn that. Don't unlearn too much. Now. Let's start learning back. Yeah.
They've got video games and ping pong tables. On the table when we walked in, there was a block of chocolate and a hammer. And a chisel.
Yeah.
You could walk up and just knock off a chunk of chocolate and keep walking. You could get a massage. You could get your nails done. You could drop your dog off. Right? There was a maker space for the adults. There were napping pods.
Oh,
there was
my
a roof
favorite.
Garden. Right? Why does Google do this, Mike?
They want to keep you there. They want to compete. They want you to feel like you're alive, like you can do your life stuff. Also, so you don't leave. That's another part of it. You've got your creature comforts there, whatever your interests are. You also follow your interests at work so you can be creative. You're not tethered to a cubicle or a desk. They also want people like this millennial generation to stay there and stay creative and fresh while they're there.
People, this generation is changing careers at unprecedented rates.
Oh my gosh.
At Leiden, I mentioned we're doing this $100 million construction project. Part of that project is creating a preschool and daycare that our staff members can bring their children to. that's going to be, I think, when it's all said and done, one of the biggest recruitment and retention things in the history of our school district.
The movie 9 to 5 really was a statement about unlearning. Unlearning a lot of stereotypes, unlearning a lot of experiences. That movie was about unlearning. That's the similar kind of concept. Meet the people where their lifestyle needs are.
I can't imagine they were expecting a 9 to 5 reference or a Mr. Ed reference today.
You're welcome.
You know, Susie mentioned Twitter. Mike and I are very active on Twitter. We run a chat for superintendents. It's always the first Wednesday of the month. You're all welcome to join us if you are so inclined. It's not just for superintendents. We have all kinds of educators. Mm-hmm. So we do that, but we also use social media to celebrate our schools. And I think it's important as a mind shift to go where your students are, go where your community is to tell your story. Some of the best one-on-one connections I have with kids come through responding to tweets, liking tweets, and making that initial connection with them right there.
Now, the hashtag for this conference is hashtag, or number sign, Cognia Connect, one word, no spaces. And then if you choose to use Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, and if you choose to use this hashtag, your thinking, your reflecting, your learning in real time gets archived, gets collected, gets curated automatically to this bookmark or this hashtag Cognia Connect. Then you can just look at Twitter through this one channel. If all you look at with Twitter is Cognia Connect, you'll see what each other are thinking, you'll share the stories, the images. It's a different way, an enhanced way to share the story of professional learning, and you can share it back with the folks back home.
So Mike and I are trying to fit as much as we can into 1 hour.
Four minutes. So
we're going to spend time talking about student voice and empowering your students during a breakout session. Mm-hmm. We see student voice and recognizing it and harnessing it as kind of a subset of unlearning in our school cultures. So this is a video on our district website where our students and our staff members are talking about our schools, and we're letting them tell our story through video. And so we'll talk more about those things. Jack Aldrich, you know, we mentioned him at the beginning. The very first video he ever put out on the internet was of him talking about this image. And he says, you know, when we think about our schools, we think about the work that we do. Often if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's a duck, right? Unless you turn your head a little bit and it's a rabbit. Right?
Yeah.
So we don't have to make huge changes sometime. Sometimes it's just a little change in perspective, a little change in the things that we do to best meet the needs of our students. So again, here's the link to this whole slide deck, so you can have those videos and any content. If you want to get the QR code, we'll put that back up when we're done here. Mike and I are pretty shy, and so if you want to connect in any way, there's a few different ways you can reach us. Feel free to reach out. We're happy to connect with you if we can support any of the work you're doing. But I think with that,
we want to say thank you for joining us on this journey of unlearning. Thank you, Cognia, for allowing us to be here. Wish you a wonderful conference and a fantastic journey in leadership. Thank you very much.